Okay, so we're going to get started with the next presentation. It's going to be from Ford Motor Company. We're especially happy to have Bob Shanks here, Ford's Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer, as our day two keynote speaker. Bob has served as CFO since 2012, prior to which he was Ford's Corporate Controller. But Bob's career with Ford stretches back a little further than that. Yep, 36 years, if you don't mind me pointing out. And encompasses roles in North America, South America, Europe, and Asia, I believe. He's been the CFO of Mazda, and he's been the CFO of Ford's former premier automotive group, essentially Volvo, Jaguar, Land Rover, Aston Martin. Also, Neil Schloss is in the front row here, and we have multiple executives from Investor Relations. Bob, thanks for coming so much.
Thank you.
All right, today what I'd like to do is to take the opportunity to update you on our business, specifically a more in-depth discussion of our capital strategy that underlines our One Ford plan. I'll provide an overview of our strategy and then share additional insights into how we think about and how we allocate the capital that we deploy across Ford. I'll conclude with a summary of our 2013 planning assumptions and key metrics, and recap our mid-decade targets. And of course, I'll leave time at the end for any questions that you may have, and at that time I'll ask Neil Schloss, who's our treasurer, to join me. In any discussion of Ford's capital strategy, one would have to start with our One Ford plan, which is shown here. The plan hasn't changed and is as relevant today as it was about 6 years ago when it became our guide. The goal of the plan is straightforward and is represented by the graphic at the bottom of the slide. To serve all markets with a full family of best-in-class vehicles, small, medium, and large, cars, utilities, and trucks, executed through our One Ford plan, delivering profitable growth for all. Although the external environment in which we operate is almost always uncertain to one degree or another, and at any time can present significant challenges in some part of the world, we have made substantial progress over the past 6 years and are continuing to move forward in all elements of our plan. Given the fluidity of the external environment, including the cyclicality of our industry, as well as the high capital requirements of our growing business, the success of our One Ford plan requires a robust capital strategy, one that's completely aligned with our business strategies and that commands appropriate returns on the capital that we deploy. Slide 3 outlines the core principles of our capital strategy. The first principle is to ensure a solid foundation for the company by developing, then maintaining, a strong balance sheet that progressively achieves the strongest possible investment grade ratings over time. This includes holding sufficient liquidity, achieving an appropriate level of automotive debt, and fully funding and de-risking our global funded pension plans. The second principle is to finance our One Ford plan, targeting returns in excess of our cost of capital. This includes developing new products and technologies to maintain the freshest showroom of best-in-class products across a full family of vehicles, while aggressively growing our business in developed and emerging markets. It also includes a strong Ford credit that supports our automotive growth, generates solid profits, and distributes dividends to Ford through its parent, Ford Holdings. These actions, as they are successfully executed, will provide profitable growth for all, which is our third principle. This includes our shareholders, who will benefit from share price appreciation and distributions. As we continue to deliver our plan, we'll consider additional ways to generate value to our shareholders, including increasing returns, returning excess capital, and reducing the volatility of our results. Slide 4 illustrates the calls on capital required to support our business. The capital available for these various uses is represented by the bubble at the center of the graphic, which is capital in excess of the liquidity levels we target to run the automotive business day to day while protecting for cyclical downturns and exogenous shocks. And that's where we'll start our discussion. As indicated here on slide 5, we presently target to have on hand an average ongoing automotive cash balance of about $20 billion. There will be periods, of course, when we'll be above or below this amount due to future cash flow expectations such as pension contributions, debt maturities, capital investments, or restructuring requirements, as well as short-term timing differences plus our assessment of where we happen to be in the business cycle. Our automotive cash target includes sufficient cash to satisfy minimum operating requirements, as well as protect for a severe economic downturn while maintaining an investment grade credit rating. In addition to cash, we also target to maintain a revolving facility for our automotive business of up to $10 billion to protect against exogenous shocks. And today, our global committed facility is $10.7 billion. We presently assess the appropriate long-term target for total automotive liquidity, that's cash plus the revolving facility, to be about $30 billion, an amount sufficient to support our business priorities and to protect our business as well. As you would expect, we continually monitor our liquidity needs. So as a result, our automotive cash and total liquidity targets could be reduced over time based on improved operating performance and changes in our risk profile. Now let's discuss our uses of capital, beginning here on slide 6. Consistent with our One Ford plan, as mentioned earlier, our goal is to deliver profitable growth for all by generating returns in excess of our cost of capital. As you would expect, product and growth investments represent by far the largest calls on capital. But before we discuss this in more detail, just a few words first on restructuring and infrastructure. Over the past several years, as we implemented the One Ford plan, we incurred substantial restructuring costs, first in North America and now, presently underway, in Europe. While our expectation is that restructuring calls in capital will be minimal once our European transformation plan is completed, the reality is that it's likely that there will be times in the future when it will be necessary to prune parts of our business given the global and competitive forces of change to which we are exposed. Recognizing the need for such actions and then acting quickly and decisively will be critical to maintaining a healthy and successful business. In addition, continually and prudently investing in infrastructure, which includes most of our non-product investments, is another important priority to ensure that we have an efficient and effective global enterprise within the ever-changing dynamics of our industry. Now let's turn to slide 7 and discuss in more detail product and growth, which are the heart and soul of the One Ford plan. A key element of the plan is accelerating development of new products our customers want and value. Today, we're continuing to strengthen our product portfolio in developed, mature markets while aggressively expanding in BRIC and other emerging markets around the world. We're doing this with a focus on our two brands, Ford and Lincoln, working to continuously improve the favorable opinion, perception, and revenue each brand commands among customers. Our product plan for the Ford brand is based on providing customers with vehicles that consistently excel in four areas. It's what we call our four-pillar strategy. That's quality, fuel efficiency, safety, and smart technology. While offering excellence in these four areas, our objective also is to provide great value as perceived by our customers. In addition to offering through two strong brands, outstanding products and technologies our customers want and value, we're progressing our efforts to unlock the value of our increasing scale, optimize our global footprint and improve its flexibility, and achieve fully competitive cost, all driven by a skilled and motivated team. Our platform strategy underpins our product scale and footprint strategies. This year, more than 85% of our volume will be based on 9 global core platforms, with examples of nameplates for each platform shown here on slide 9. The benefits of this are more products, faster product cadence, and better profitability. Optimizing platform count lets us increase volume per platform, improve our engineering efficiencies, and gain efficiencies of scale for us and also for our suppliers. Based on improved near-term cash flows and the identification of additional opportunities for profitable growth during the second half of this decade, we have increased the ongoing amount of capital spending to support products, growth, restructuring, and infrastructure to about $7.5 billion annually, with variation by year. This compares to our outlook for capital spending this year of about $7 billion and our prior mid-decade guidance of about $6 billion annually. Now let's move on to Ford Credit, our strategic asset that has returned over $27 billion of capital to Ford over the last 20 years. Ford Credit plays a key role in our capital strategy, providing world-class dealer and customer financial services, maintaining a strong balance sheet, and producing solid profits and distributions. Ford Credit's capital strategy, shown here on slide 11, centers around maintaining a well-capitalized balance sheet with strong liquidity to withstand economic downturns while continuing to originate new customer and dealer financing to support our automotive business. Ford Credit employs a diverse funding strategy as well as robust risk management to support key capital strategy metrics, which I'll detail in just a minute, that enable strong investment grade ratings. Ford Credit targets a return on equity in the high single digits. Ford Credit also has a long history of returning excess capital back to the automotive business, which I earlier noted, and this is expected to continue going forward. We focus on four key capital strategy metrics for Ford Credit, as shown here on slide 12. First, ABS debt as a percent of managed receivables, liquidity, managed leverage, and as mentioned previously, return on equity. The combination of these metrics, we believe, reflects the appropriate balance sheet profile, risk appetite, and return guidance appropriate for the Ford Credit business. Ford Credit is on track to deliver all of these target metrics by mid-decade, and in fact, three of the four key metrics already have been achieved. Now let's turn to the capital allocated to our automotive balance sheet here on slide 13. We've made significant progress over the past few years in strengthening our balance sheet and remain well on track toward achievement of our mid-decade targets. We will continue to work to strengthen further our balance sheet to support improved investment grade ratings, but the amount of incremental capital required to do this will diminish over time as we achieve by mid-decade our target debt levels and fully fund and de-risk our global funded pension plans. We are on track to achieve our mid-decade guidance of about $10 billion of automotive debt, mainly through scheduled debt maturities of about $5 billion. As shown here on slide 14, we target a mix of long-term public unsecured debt, supplemented by international debt where available to finance our growth plans and manage exchange risk, and an unsecured revolving line of credit. Our debt strategy focuses on optimizing our mix of debt and equity in the capital structure to achieve a competitive cost of capital. Ongoing, we'll continue to evaluate the appropriate level of debt for the business, taking into account our growth plans, capital structure, and credit ratings. Another significant element of our strategy to strengthen our automotive balance sheet is fully funding and de-risking our global funded pension plans outlined here on slide 15. Our strategy is to fully fund our funded plans and migrate our asset mix to about 80% fixed income and about 20% growth asset investments to better match the interest rate sensitivity of the associated liabilities. We've implemented several actions to accomplish this, including discretionary contributions and liability actions. Our funded status also has benefited recently from higher discount rates. We believe our strategy fundamentally removes non-core risk from our balance sheet while protecting our business against potentially large calls on capital during economic downturns. As indicated here on slide 16, for 2013, we continue to expect full year contributions to our global funded pension plans of $5 billion and already have contributed $2.8 billion during the first half. We've completed about 60% of expected settlements associated with our U.S. salaried voluntary lump sum program, and we've settled $2.7 billion of obligations in total since the inception of the program last year. We've also increased our U.S. fixed income asset mix to 60%, and that compares with 55% at the end of last year, as we continue to work overtime toward our target of 80% with the objective of reducing funded status volatility. Combined with an increase in discount rates, these actions have significantly improved through the first half of this year the estimated overall funded status of our global pension plans compared with the end of last year. Based on present assumptions, and as shown here on slide 17, our average annual contributions to our funded plans over the next 3 years are expected to range between $2 to $3 billion, a reduction from 2012 and 2013. This includes both mandatory and discretionary contributions. Now, again, these are projections, and the assumptions underlying these contributions could change. Ongoing, and once we have fully de-risked our funded pension plans by mid-decade, the amount of cash required annually for our pension plans is expected to be limited to annual ongoing service cost. The last area I'll touch on today is our priority to provide attractive returns for our shareholders. Slide 19 highlights recent and potential future actions to ensure we're providing appropriate and attractive returns for our shareholders. In 2012, we resumed our dividend, then doubled the per share amount in the first quarter this year. Since dividends were reinstated, we will have returned $2 billion to shareholders based on dividends paid or declared so far this year. Ongoing, we target a regular dividend that grows with earnings and is sustainable over an economic or business cycle. In addition to regular dividends, we also implemented a share repurchase program last year to offset dilution from newly granted shares associated with management compensation. Another anti-dilutive option we have beginning in November 2014 is to terminate conversion rights and settle our outstanding 2016 convertible debt with cash instead of shares. Our fully diluted earnings per share at the end of the second quarter included 98 million shares associated with this 2016 convertible debt. At present prices, this would be the equivalent to a share repurchase program of $1.7 billion. We will continue to evaluate other actions over time, and of course, any actions will always be subject to business conditions. At Ford, we evaluate the long-term success of our One Ford plan by measuring total shareholder returns. Besides the shareholder distributions discussed on the previous slide, we also are focused on long-term growth and market valuation. In our view, as shown on slide 20, long-term capital appreciation in our industry is generated through revenue growth, strong operating margins, sustainable dividends, and as appropriate, other shareholder distributions, and a strong investment-grade balance sheet. Our One Ford strategy is perfectly aligned with these factors. We expect the One Ford plan to continue to deliver over time an improving investment-grade balance sheet, a growing business with strong operating margins, and sustainable dividends as we invest our capital in opportunities that generate returns in excess of the cost of capital. As we continue to do this, we expect to provide attractive total shareholder returns. Finally, and importantly, we believe that the combination of continued strong operating performance coupled with execution of our capital strategy as outlined here today will result in improving credit ratings for the company, which should enable us to sustain an investment grade rating through the inevitable downturn to come. And the future starts with continued performance this year. As we confirmed last month with our second quarter earnings report, we expect this year to be another strong year for Ford Motor Company, somewhat better, in fact, than our expectations earlier this year. Our guidance today is unchanged from our earnings announcement. In terms of our financial performance, we expect total company pre-tax profit to be about equal to or higher than last year. This would mark the fourth consecutive year of total company pre-tax operating profit at or better than $8 billion. We also expect automotive operating margins to be about equal to 2012, and this also would represent the fourth consecutive year of automotive operating margins at or better than 5%. And finally, we expect automotive operating related cash flow to be substantially higher than 2012, including capital spending of about $7 billion. This also would be the fourth consecutive year of very robust operating-related cash flows. Beyond this year, and as already mentioned, we continue to work toward our mid-decade outlook, which is aligned to our One Ford plan and the capital strategy outlined here today. And with that, I'd like to conclude. Thank you for your time and your attention. And I would like to take any questions that you might have. And for that, I'm going to ask Neil Schloss to join me up here on stage.
Eric, do you want to come up as well?
Sure.
I'll just start as Eric walks up to the stage. Okay. So a lot more incremental mention of shareholder distribution than prior, but obviously within the context of a very balanced approach. Just curious, and including, I think you called it, other available options as appropriate over time, which I just interpret to be sort of normal course share repurchases in addition to the taking out the convertible, the dilutive convert. So just curious as to why maybe we're talking about this now as opposed to 6 months ago. Is it the $8 billion pension contributions you've made over the last year and you're going to make this year, maybe in combination with the discount rates? Does it have something to do with maybe your recent pairing of losses in Europe? Or actually, everything sort of tracked better last quarter, didn't it? Is South America did better, Asia Pacific did better.
Are you basically asking me why are we talking
about this now? Is it because of increased confidence?
First of all, we should. We've talked a lot about the operating side of the business, and over the last year or so, we're getting more and more questions around our capital strategy. How do we think about capital strategy? Do we think about capital strategy? Do we think about shareholder returns? What's your minimum cash? When do these huge contributions to the pension plans ever end? How much is ahead of us? What are your plans on debt? On and on and on. And we've only partially answered those questions. And so what we thought it would be appropriate to do, because if I'm an investor, I would like to understand how a company thinks about all these things. And we're very interested in investors. So what we thought we would do is, as we have tried to do on the operating side of the business, is lay out quite clearly and quite transparently what is the capital strategy of Ford Motor Company that underpins a One Ford plan. And what are some of the key markers around some of these questions, if you will, that we've been getting, and just put them all together into one story so that it's understandable in terms of at least what we're thinking. And we don't know what folks' response will be to that, if they'll like it or not like it, but we thought it was appropriate for us to put it out there so people do understand exactly what our plan is.
Yeah, I think there's sort of a sense that you've been kind of swinging with two bats, right, with all of these pension contributions. And as we can cycle past that and maybe just have to focus on the ongoing service costs, this will be a much more relevant question. So in terms of timing, are you kind of thinking maybe beyond 2013 after you've made the large pension contributions, and then maybe could the first potential action be that November, did you say 2014, and then kind of take it from there? Is that how we should think about that?
You mean in terms of additional shareholder distributions?
Right.
Well, I think the way to think about this is that we've clearly said first on dividends that as the business continues to grow and as we continue to generate strong operating results, that we would expect that dividends would increase along the way to the extent that we think that they're sustainable at whatever that level is over an economic cycle. So I think that's something that people should understand quite clearly. And I think our performance so far demonstrates how we're thinking about that. In terms of distributions beyond that, I think the convertible debt in 2014 is almost upon us, and I think we've kind of indicated what our thoughts are around that in terms of what our options are. I don't think, and I should mention also the anti-dilutive share repurchase program that we started last year. It's underway again this year to offset the compensation-related effects of that. Beyond that, I would think through mid-decade, when you think about what we are setting out to do with achieving the targeted level of automotive debt, the pension contributions, we've talked about the dividends, we've indicated that we're going to be taking our capital spending to higher levels because we believe that we've got a lot of momentum and some really, really great growth opportunities that we want to invest in. I wouldn't think that there would be a whole lot beyond what we've already outlined through mid-decade.
Great.
I'd like to ask it, Neil, maybe in a different way. Just running rough math here, I don't know if this microphone's working. There you go. You guys are paying your debt and pension out of free cash flow, and if we assume static state, you know, no improvement in Europe, just you're doing great but not greater, you can pay debt and pension out of free cash flow. So does that mean you guys are sitting on $3 to $5 billion of excess liquidity plus the amount of free cash flow that you guys are going to generate once you consummate that delevering?
Yeah, I think in the way I would sort of answer that question is, you know, we set out today that, you know, we want to hold about $20 billion of cash. We ended the second quarter at 25 and change. And that 20 is over, you know, it's going to be sometimes higher, sometimes lower, really depending on what our near-term cash needs are. We've laid out a cap spending strategy. We've laid out significant debt that we want to get down from the $15 billion of debt we have down to 10 by mid-decade. We've still got some work to do on the pension, and we've laid those contributions out. And then you have free cash generation. So we're comfortable with our present liquidity position. It's higher than the 20, but when we look toward the near-term cash needs to continue to invest in the balance sheet, it's appropriate.
And then it kind of dovetail off of Brian's timing question. Your dividends are going to rise with earnings, and I guess we're not going to get a payout ratio, but you guys have that. Do you need to achieve your leverage goal and or European break-even before you, you know, pay out that incremental portion to shareholders beyond the preferred takeout?
No, those aren't
they're not
constraints. We certainly would expect to maintain the glide path that we internally are looking at in terms of the European transformation plan. In fact, all of the elements of our business. To make sure that we're continuing to grow the business and generating the type of cash that you know, we're expecting to generate to support everything that we've outlined. But there's not a particular, it's a holistic view of all of that, not any one particular thing.
And I
think the only thing I would add is the risk profile of the business as we go forward changes pretty materially. It's changed already given the performance of the business. But as debt gets down, as pension gets fully funded, we tend to have a lot less risk in the balance sheet side. And so the financial risk goes down materially, which gives us a lot more flexibility to invest in future growth, to invest in more products, and to look at other things.
I'm just from a debt side, I think it's a high-class problem that you guys may be generating way too much cash, because your structuring is going down, European profits are going up, your pension contributions are going down, your interest costs are going down. I know you're adding the CapEx. But is there going to be a problem in 2015 that you guys are generating too much cash and we start seeing some
master
type of M&A?
Well, I don't think it's a problem.
Seriously, I mean,
but if you know,
what do you do with all that cash?
Well, we've outlined that we're open to other ways of managing that cash. We obviously will continue to look for opportunities to grow the business if they generate returns in excess of the cost of capital. But we've also indicated that we're open to other thoughts around shareholder distributions to share with them that excess capital. It could be special dividends. It could be larger share repurchase programs. So we're open to, you know, any of those thoughts and ideas.
Yeah, and on the M&A front you just mentioned, I think we've been pretty clear that we're focused on the Ford and Lincoln brand.
One Ford. Right.
One Ford, and I think there's not anything out there that's going to change that.
So supposing you do have all this excess cash, as we're anticipating, it's sort of the idea that I'm kind of perceiving that you would increase the dividend by the amount which you think would be sustainable. You'd never have to pare back. And then if you happen to have a bunch of excess at this period of time, you could dedicate that toward share repurchases, which could easily be
or special dividends.
Or growth.
Yeah. Or special dividends.
Yeah. But just to be clear, we were not trying to be subtle, we don't think we have excess cash right now. As Neil said, we're clearly above the $20 billion ongoing that we think we need to run the business and protect it at the same time from, you know, future downturns. But when you lay out, and I think we've done that quite clearly, the amount of debt repayments we have between now and mid-decade, the amount of pension contributions between now and mid-decade, and if you assume the business continues to perform well, and that may mean something in terms of shareholder actions that we've already talked about, we think that we're probably sitting at about the right level of cash right now.
Okay, and this was a great, like, financial-related presentation that you gave. That's, you know, in large part because of all the good, you know, stuff you've done on the product side and the operating side. But you did touch on one operating-related item, which was the increased capital expenditures. So maybe just as a segue into the audience questions, you could talk about what was driving that. I think that we're starting to see good leverage of the spending in Asia-Pacific. Are these incremental opportunities that have just come up on the horizon, or was it maybe just like an improved pension plan opens up redistributing cash, it also maybe opens up some incremental organic growth opportunities?
No, I think what's happened, if you go back to the $6 billion that we talked about when we announced our mid-decade outlook back in, was it June 2011? As we have progressed our journey in the One Ford plan, we are beginning to understand and appreciate much more the opportunities we have with this global portfolio of products, both the vehicles themselves, the powertrains, you know, all the technologies, the ability to not only develop additional top hats off of the global core platforms, but also how we can take those products and much more rapidly and quickly spread them, you know, around the regions in which we participate. And those opportunities, based on the business cases that we're developing, are very, very attractive. And we want to go for that because we think it gives us an opportunity to accelerate our growth to a level that we hadn't even anticipated back in 2011. So it's largely around that, and also as we do grow and as we see the industry growth around the world, there's also probably some capacity-related actions in there that we didn't assume back in 2011.
Great, thank you.
Okay.
In the middle, Jim.
Brian, you ask them to identify themselves?
Yeah, if the audience members could just please identify their names and firms. Thanks. Starting with Jim Irwin from Moon Capital.
Hi, it's Jim Irwin at Moon Capital.
Hey, Jim, how are you?
Good to see you. I just want to thanks for the clarity on this capital allocation.
I think you're one of the ones that was asking.
Yeah, right? I know. That's what I appreciate.
Just for you.
I wanted to go back to Ryan's point because China's been where you have tremendous growth underway, but it's self-funded. And I'm trying to figure out, so I look at this incremental delta in your CapEx outside China, and Europe's not growing. North America's maturing. So I'm trying to kind of figure out this incremental delta that you're talking about, 6 to 7.5. Given that you're driving your efficiencies on the R&D side, so the whole product development side is kind of a separate discussion than the bump in your CapEx.
Mm-hmm.
So can you provide a little bit more color on the expansion plans?
Yeah, we actually see growth everywhere. So in North America, I mean, last year we added 400,000 units of capacity on a going basis. This year we've just talked recently about another 200,000. And as we look ahead and, you know, putting aside a cyclical downturn, at some point that'll happen, but if you just look at the trend growth in North America, based on our projections, you know, we see a lot of growth ahead, and in particular in some of the areas in which we already are capacity constrained. So we think that there's opportunities for further growth here. If you look at Asia Pacific, we think there's opportunities clearly beyond China. You've got you know, last year we opened a new plant in Thailand. Right now we have two plants under construction in India. And so we see further opportunities for us there. And certainly the growth that we're seeing in China is extremely encouraging in terms of how the brand and the products are being received. In South America, we're expanding our portfolio there. Don't think, given the volatility of the region, that necessarily that would mean more brick and mortar, but certainly you have to spend money in order to get more out of the facilities that we need or that we have. And in the case of Europe, we're investing in restructuring. We're investing in reconfiguring our footprint in Europe. We've talked about expanding our portfolio by 50%. So there's, you know, we think there's substantial opportunities for us there, and we're investing for that as well. And of course, what I'm talking about when you're talking about capital spending through mid-decade, you're looking, you know, towards the end of the decade in terms of, you know, when some of these products will start to come out. So we're kind of looking much beyond the next 2 or 3 years in terms of what the opportunities are. And we see them everywhere, frankly.
Just as a follow-up, global margins are 2%.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, China's starting to come through past the break-even into profit.
Mm-hmm.
Europe, should we be thinking about Europe, as you hit your break-even target, should we think
It's a profitability target, not break-even.
Break-even, mid-decade,
no, profitability by mid-decade.
Profitability?
Yes. Yeah.
Even, like, 2015, all this new
yeah. Well, I think in part it will depend upon you know, how things just externally develop in Europe. It was quite encouraging to see the GDP numbers that came out. Was it today or yesterday on Euroland? It actually grew, and I think Germany was up 7/10. France was up 0.5%. I mean, it was quite encouraging. So I don't know if it'll be linear or not, but we certainly would like to get to an operating margin for Europe of sort of around the 6-8% range. And sooner is better than later. After that one, there's someone up here in front, too, that also has a question. We can't hear if the person.
Sorry. Talking. Oh, it's on now. Stephanie Reniger, J.P. Morgan. Just to piggyback off this former person's question and Eric's question as well.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Can you speak up?
Yeah. Just to dovetail off the past few questions about your excess cash position and your thoughts on restructuring in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
You're in an enviable position having this excess cash, and Ford has obviously gone in a different direction in terms of rationalizing capacity in Europe rather than investing in other partners and, I guess, reallocating their vehicles towards their existing plants. I was just wondering, in Europe in particular, I mean, how would you feel in terms of taking your cash flow and investing in other partners with a wider footprint in Europe, and perhaps saving in terms of CapEx and raw material costs, and then also just any thoughts about deepening your partnerships abroad and in developing markets?
So your question is, would we think about working with a partner in Europe instead of going on our own?
Yeah.
No.
You don't want to take an equity stake in PSA?
No. We are very, very confident in our ability to take our operations in Europe, which already, if you go back before the structural recession that we're in, I mean, we have been profitable in, I forgot the number now, it's like 7 of the last 9 years or 6 of 8 or something like that. But, you know, most of the years from 2004 through 2011, we were profitable. Obviously, in retrospect, we hadn't, and we've been restructuring over that period, so we clearly, in retrospect, didn't restructure enough. Given what's occurred and what the likely growth rate is for the industry over the next several years. But we are extremely confident of our ability to put in place a cost structure and a product portfolio that will enable us to be profitable at an appropriate level in the Euro 19 area, Europe 19 area that we talk about when we say Europe. But also, you know, we've got a very, very good joint venture that we put into place was it a year ago, in Russia with a partner called Solars. And that venture is off to a very, very good start. And we think we've got some good opportunities in Eastern Europe as well. So we feel extremely comfortable with what we're doing there. The other thing that we're starting to do more and more in the company, and you've seen little glimpses of it, again, as the whole One Ford plan progresses and we begin to understand ourselves better and better how to leverage all of these assets and to operate as a global enterprise, we're starting to better appreciate the opportunities of developing global production hubs. And then from those hubs, where appropriate, able to take product that normally you wouldn't think you have enough volume to build where you sell, which is what our, you know, our historical past has been, but yet enough volume to be consequential in a particular region. And so, for example, the EcoSport that we've talked about taking from India, where we've just launched it, and then towards the end of this year begin to export it to Europe, that's going to be a great add to the portfolio. Probably not enough volume that you'd ever build it in Europe. It wouldn't make any sense to do that. But we're able to take it from India. We get actually the scale benefits of that and that production hub, and our suppliers do. And then we can ship it into Europe, and it it's a great product, and it's going to attract consumers into the showroom, whether for that product or for others in the lineup. So I think you're going to see more and more of that type of activity from Ford Motor Company. And I think it will give us an ability to accelerate our growth plans, not just in Europe, but in other parts of the world as well, and sweat the assets that we're putting in place everywhere around the world.
I think we have time for one more question.
Hi, David Sino, Epic Investment Partners.
Oh, sorry.
I had a question on Ford Credit. You mentioned the $27 billion of dividends in 20 years. I'm wondering, why is that ROE target not higher? And how do you price that capital internally? Because high single digits, at least for a comparable financial institution, that's probably not earning their cost of capital. So is that a through the cycle number, or maybe you can explain that to me? Thanks.
Do you want to take that?
Yeah, I think it is definitely through a cycle number. And you know, when we look at ourselves relative to our captive peers and look at the associated borrowing cost and capital structures associated, we think we're appropriately placing ourselves from a standpoint of returns and the overall mix of debt and equity, and that to some extent, because we're running at a leverage of 8 to 9 to 1, is going to drive the capital required and then obviously drive the business. I think the benefit that we see with Ford Credit is not only its own returns, but the overall benefit that it provides the enterprise from a standpoint of supporting Ford in all the markets around the world that we feel is appropriate for Ford Credit to be in and generate incremental sales. I mean, the charter of Ford Credit is obviously has its own from a standpoint of risk profile, making sure the assets that are originated have the right risk characteristics. But also it is to support the sale of cars and trucks globally. And we believe that with a return target of high single digits, that's an appropriate capital structure.
Okay, that was a really great presentation. Please join me in thanking Bob and you.
Okay, thank you.